So this is From Maine with Love, an Allagash Brewing podcast where we talk about beer, our community here in Maine, and things that generally make us happy. This was just such a fun podcast to record because Susie and Mike, who are both on our sales team, are just such engaging, interesting people who represent Allagash away from Allagash. So Susie's in Philly, Mike is in the Chicago area, and it's just we go into a lot about what it's like to work on a work as a person who sells beer, what it's like in their particular areas, both in the beer scene that they have in Philly and Chicago, and then also, you know, what does Allagash look like in that scene? You know, how does Allagash fit in there, and what do people think of it? And then also just kind of talking about, you know, trying to stay connected from afar as well. There's a lot to when you're a salesperson and you're farther away from the company, you know, how do you keep that connection to the company and keep that connection to the sense of place? Because we obviously care quite a bit about our sense of place here in Maine at Allagash. So, I mean, honestly, just this was just such a really heartwarming conversation, I'm going to say. It was just so fun to hear the real candid sort of thoughts of Mike and Susie. I had a blast. So if that sounds good to you, have a listen. Today, I have two excellent members of our sales team, along with Liz, joining us. And so it is me, Brett Willis, Liz Wilson, also on the marketing team.
Hello.
We have Susie Woods, our Mid-Atlantic area manager. Hi, Susie.
Hello.
And then Mike Polis, our central area sales manager as well.
Hey, everybody. Great to be here.
Thank you both for making the time to join us. And so we're going to talk about what it's like to sell our beer away from Maine or just sell our beer in general. I think you know, I have some of the best beer selling folks, I think, in our company here. So maybe the world, maybe the universe. We'll leave that for you to judge. And so before we get talking about selling beer and everything else that kind of goes around that, I wanted to ask some questions. So my first question goes, Susie, you make a mean chocolate chip cookie, I've heard. And the question is, what's your secret? Or secrets?
I'll share because it's somebody else's secret, really. Oh. So I feel like I'm passing it forward. Christina Tosi behind Milk Bar in New York City, She browns the butter. So that's one thing. There's three things. Mike already knows this too. Mike knows the secret. So now everybody knows the secret.
I'm biting my tongue because I want to share the secret, but it's not my secret to share.
You brown the butter and that gives like this neat little toffee character to the cookie. Mm. She also uses a powdered milk, which I can't really articulate exactly what that does for the cookie, but I always do it 2 tablespoons.
That's not insignificant.
I do chunks instead of chips. And then another shout out, not to our sponsors, but Maldon smoked salt. Oh. So I finish it off with a little smoked salt. Yeah. And then there's also the cookie sheet bang, where I take it out with about 4 minutes to go. And I do a little counter bang and spreads them out a little bit. I don't want a puffy cookie. I like chewy cookies, but I don't want like a cake. Cakeys are the worst. I'm glad that the word is out that I make a good chocolate chip cookie. That's the three things. Powdered milk, which sounds gross, but powdered milk, brown butter, and Maldon smoked sea salt.
They're lovely. As a chocolate chip cookie connoisseur myself, I was lucky enough to receive some in the post from Suzanne, and they were just delightful.
Can't get a birthday card in the mail half the time, but Mike Polis needs cookies. I'm sending them to Chicago.
Got the cookie. Hey, I mean, and they stood up in the mail. I feel like that's another mark in favor of the cookie. Amazing.
Big time. Pleasantly surprised with how the condition in which I received
sturdy.
Also, props to the post. Sending a good cookie. Liz, I feel like you're into, I don't know. I could see you raring to say something about the cookie.
I mean, I just love chocolate so much. So, I'm excited and I might offer Susie, I don't know, something to get me some cookies because so good. And I'm a big fan of Milk Bar. I have eaten a lot of their truffles, and yeah, the powdered sugar. I think the powdered milk. I've made some recipes of theirs with the powdered milk, and it's an odd. I would not call it a pantry staple, but it is does something. Mm-hmm. Does something good.
You want to know this? We don't need to keep this on the podcast, but you know who else uses that in a fair number of things? Eventide. The Eventide folks. I think they might even use in their brown butter lobster roll like that milk powder. I talked to them one time and they were telling me about all the different places they put that milk powder. So that milk powder is like an industry secret at this point.
Ooh.
Huh. Now, the more you know.
Well, Liz, if you share your address, I'll share some cookies. So
sounds good.
We'll send them up to Maine for you.
Yeah.
Good deal.
It's basically all I did, Liz, and I got them too.
Okay.
So, you're awesome.
All right, Mike. This is another food-related question because, I mean, why not? So I've heard you have a special cream sauce recipe for pasta. And I wanted to know what the special aspects of it are.
I don't know that it's that special, Brett, but I do love heavy, rich, cream-based pastas. Doesn't have to be 95 degrees out, but it is, and we'll still eat it, like we did on Tuesday of this week.
There you go.
For me, it's just heavy whipping cream. It's shallots with some butter. Sometimes a white wine deglaze. I love incorporating lemon to help cut through the richness. And a trick that I learned way back in my restaurant days, egg yolk to bind it all at the end.
Wow.
So it's quite rich. It's quite luxurious. And we eat it about once a week because we're in the Midwest and that's what we do.
Oh, man.
Is this now a food podcast?
I mean.
I think so.
It kind of is.
I don't complain.
Yeah.
I would say that probably to a person, almost everyone at Allagash is passionate about food in some way, shape, or form. Like, I think that is something that tends to go through, go hand in hand with beer, you know? It's food related.
Susie and I, as area sales managers, are on area sales manager call with leadership, the national sales manager, twice a week. And as we kind of alluded to, a good 5 to 10 to 15% of it almost each week is talking about what we've just eaten, what we're going to eat. Food is big.
Yeah.
For all of us.
Yeah.
I would really actually like to share what I had for dinner last night.
Please.
It was amazing. There's a cool little izakaya kind of spot by my house in Fishtown in Philadelphia, Chew Noodle and Nunu next door, little sister restaurants. Mm-hmm. And it has Asian influences, Japanese influences, but they have two different types of hoagies, but not what you think. Like one is like a sushi hoagie and the other one was like a hoagie on like a sesame milk bread. And I ordered it like, can I have both the hoagies? Because sometimes people order one hoagie and they get the other one by accident. And I'm like, I don't even know if you can see that.
Yeah.
But maybe I could text you guys. So please. One was like almost like a lunch meat kind of hoagie with provolone. And it was just the milk bread sesame bun was so good. And I just couldn't believe it. And she's like, nobody ever ordered it that way before. Like I'll have hoagie two ways because there's two different kinds of hoagies and you would never think a hoagie would be at a Japanese restaurant. I was really excited about it. Yeah.
I think
that's a pro move.
That is a pro move. Nice job.
I don't even know if you have hoagies outside of Philadelphia, but it's very much a Philly thing, hoagies.
We have, what is it? What's Connecticut, Liz? We're both from Connecticut.
I've always called them grinders.
Grinders.
Okay.
Heroes. Subs. Yeah. I don't know.
Chicago, what do you have, Mike?
Sandwiches.
Small sandwiches. All right, let's get into the meat of, so to say, of this podcast. So first, this is a question for both of you. Whoever wants to start can start. But how did you get into the beer business? What kind of got you in here?
I'm glad this is being edited. Do I give you the 2-minute version or the 20-minute version? I like to talk.
Five.
Okay. I only ever drank better beer. Like I never had that, you know, shoddy beer phase of my life in college. Like I went straight for, I don't know if it was like my college freshman boyfriend or my brother to thank for my first craft beers, but I remember it was like in a parking lot in the dorm. It was like Dixie Black and Voodoo. And then I was drinking Double Box with my brother on winter break. And then my degree is in communication, so I sell beer. But after college, my sister had a friend that worked for Boston Beer Company. And her and her boyfriend had broken up. So I got to go on the big couples trip to Key West, and he was on the trip. So we're sitting there in Key West, and I'm drinking as I'm, you know, 23 years old, drinking all this free Sam Adams and loving life. And so a couple, maybe about a year after that, he said that they were hiring. And at the time I was in hospitality, my whole life has been in food and beverage. And, you know, I had one county, which is funny. When I started with Allagash 12 years ago, I had five states. Mm-hmm. By the time I had one county, and that was my first job in beer. And then from then on, it just became like, it just was everything. Like I started writing, I started a beer club for women back in 05, and just really loved the culture and the community. And then reached out to Rob in 2011, and here we are. That's the short version.
That we're going to get back to the beer club, I think, Elizabeth. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I just know Philly has a really cool beer scene, and Susie, you've been a big part of it. So I think we can talk about that in a minute, but maybe we can switch to Mike, and Mike can tell us a little bit about how he got to where he is today.
Unlike Suzanne, I did have a macro beer phase where I would drink Budweisers and cheap adjunct lagers because it was inexpensive, and it was what I was not raised on, but what I first started drinking. Like Suze, too, I've been in hospitality bars and restaurants for 5 years before getting into beer sales, which I've been in for over a decade now. I started an Irish pub chain, and I remember just like the craft beer distributor rep who worked for Windy City Distributing, our Chicago-based wholesaler here, coming in weekly and kind of just I was like a sponge at that point. I was so interested, and he would kind of educate me on the different beers. He was trying to sell me because it was an Irish pub chain that had, you know, Smithwick's, Harp, Guinness, Shock Top. It wasn't the most diverse lineup. And he would come in and he would, you know, talk about Lagunitas and Allagash and Stone and Two Brothers Brewing Company. I just remember being very, very interested in it. And I took an interest to it. Asked a lot of questions, sampled a lot of beers, kind of developed like a bottle list at this Irish pub chain, and then was there for a bit and always had a really great relationship with this distributor rep. I ended up leaving that bar and went to like an actual like craft beer bar that had like 50 taps of all craft beer. It was just the coolest thing. And again, I just kind of stayed in contact with that distributor rep. And then when there was an opportunity to interview for that wholesaler, Windy City Distributing, I interviewed and got a route and worked there for 3+ years and sold 60+ brands. Really love my time there. It was really cool learning the distributor side, learning how to sell, learning how to overcome objections, hearing the romance and the nuances of these small breweries and the stories and stuff like that. And then you kind of start winning incentives and you get to tour and go to different breweries and see how they're all different. And it was really cool because I won an incentive for selling Allagash. And I got to go to the brewery, and I remember being there, and it just felt different, and it was just really, really cool. And I'd never been to New England, I'd never been to Portland, and it just felt like this like oasis that was like the best kept secret and had everything. It was just a really, really cool weekend that I fell in love with it. And so a short time later, an opportunity came up to interview and go with Allagash, and I remember going through that whole process. It was like the gauntlet. There were so many interviews, and it took so long. And even when I came out to the brewery, I just sat in what we call guest relations, and just like someone from each department would come down and interview for me for 30 minutes, and I would just like take a sip of water and someone would come down. I always say this because after going through that series of interviews, I went on a tour, and I remember just kind of lagging the tour. And I was talking to someone on the packaging line. I was like, "How do you like working here?" It's the best job I've ever had. I was like, "Okay, buddy, like you're bottling beer." I was like, "What do you mean?" And it wasn't until like 3 months after I got hired that I was like, "This is the best job I've ever had. This is cool." And it's been 7+ years for me now. So I've been selling for over a decade, been with Allagash for over 7. And it's pretty awesome. It somehow has been in a blink of an eye, but feels like a really long time too.
Such the same boat. I mean, like, we don't need to dwell on the interview thing, but yeah, I think our interview style or our interview sort of process has definitely changed.
But
when we were hired, it was very thorough. Yeah, it was good. I got to meet with a lot of people. So touch on one quick thing, Mike, of what you mentioned. I think, you know, you're talking about distributors, you're talking about sort of like just kind of the nitty gritty, but could we do a brief step back of like, how does beer sales work? Susie, Mike, you can both kind of chime in on this one, but how, just the three-tier system.
Three-tier system, yeah. And so, you know, it's not the only commodity that works in a three-tier system, but alcohol sales basically as a whole work in a three-tier system. And it's beer specifically based off of federal and then state regulations up to a certain barrelage, how many kegs you produce kind of limits it. And so the three tiers of that are suppliers, so Allagash. The next is distributors or wholesalers, who are the ones that get the beer to the accounts, and the third being the account. So we produce the beer, we ship it to our distributors, the distributors store it, and then they're the ones that go daily to the accounts and fulfill the orders. And so those three tiers kind of work in tandem. Tandem's not the right word there, but those three tiers is kind of like how it works to get the beer from Allagash, Portland, Maine, to your tap or your grocery store, or your liquor store, and into your home. Then is your question?
It's really confusing. It's one of the questions we get asked most, I think, from customers is like, can you send me your beer, or how can I buy, you know, can I buy kegs, or can you ship it to me? Or, and it, you know, from a, just a fan
they
of
just
Allagash.
Want the beer. It's, and they're just like, I don't know why you're making this so difficult. Just the beer.
I know. Yeah.
There's a bit more to it.
Yeah.
I'll just add one thing for my friends in the Keystone State, Pennsylvania. Three is not enough. We have four tiers where often smaller bars that don't want to just, there's about six or seven different wholesalers in my region. And so instead of piecemealing and ordering different beers from different wholesalers, you would get them through a retailer and then you pay premium and then have all the different brands you wanted from that retailer. So there's actually four tiers instead. And it's a little harder to track sales, so it makes it a little bit more complicated. But people sometimes Pennsylvania blows people's minds with their four-tier system.
Yeah. And also just to be clear too, accounts, when Mike was talking about accounts, that's like bars, restaurants, grocery stores, you know, there are different ways we categorize them, but yeah, that's long and short of it. Thank you.
I mean, if you want to even go, I mean, a little bit further, there's on-premise, off-premise, on-premise being your bars, your restaurants, your taverns, off-premise being your liquor stores, your grocery stores, et cetera. You know, not everybody, to Susie's point, like there's just differences state by state. Local breweries sometimes will self-distribute because they see it as an advantage, or sometimes they don't want to, they want to have that more personal relationship with the account and tell that story, right? Or they have the means internally to satisfy the requests and control their demand. So it works different for everybody, but when you're kind of on the scale that we've grown to, we go through distributors.
And a huge part of our role with the company is sharing our brand story with the distributors and managing that distributor relationship. So much of our time is, you know, giving them the tools because they represent maybe 50 different brands and Allagash is just one of them. And so a lot of our time is allocated to making sure that Allagash is top of mind and just, you know, showing them that we care and sharing our core values and all that and working on that relationship.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, like, there's so many accounts, there's so many retailers nationally that are buying and supporting Allagash. And we're just like so grateful for all that support, whether it's a draft line, a six pack, what have you, the placement. But like the relationship with the distributors, like Sue says, is like our number one account. And it varies wholesaler to wholesaler, state to state, as far as where you fall and just trying to stay top of mind because you're only one person. You can only be in so many places. So having them, having Allagash be on the tip of their tongue when a retailer says, what else you got? Right. You want to be one of those two to three brands that they go, oh yeah, have you tried this? That's cool. Invaluable stuff.
Yeah. And a lot of the sales team has more than one distributor that they are working with. So it's even more layered than just a 1, 2, 3. There's, you know, some states have many distributors, some don't. And so it just really depends on where you are in the country or the market that we are. And I guess, Susie or Mike, how big is our sales team here at Allagash and what territories do we cover right now?
Pop quiz.
I'm not looking for exact.
Go ahead, Susie.
I'm going to guesstimate.
Six of us on. Yeah.
We're about 35, but that includes sales admin. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right, Mike?
It does, yeah.
I'm thinking when we're on a Google Meet and you see all the names, I feel like I've seen that number 34, 35 a couple of times. So. And then we're in 20 states now. We just launched Florida in the fall of 2021, which is exciting. And we're in Wisconsin now, which was launched mid-pandemic. Michael has that territory. I cover Buffalo down to Central Virginia. And so I'm one of 11 wholesalers. Keeps me busy. And then we are, exciting. You know, it's pretty much Eastern Seaboard and then Chicago or Illinois now. And no, edit Illinois, Wisconsin, and then California.
Yeah, we're not going to edit that. We're going to keep that one in. That's good.
It's fun.
That's coming awesome. Soon. Matt might
rest,
edit it. I'm
coming
sorry.
Soon to the rest of Illinois. Yeah. 2023.
Yeah. That's awesome. So this kind of goes alongside with, I think, what we were talking about. But so you're talking about, you know, we have to sell and stay top of mind. But I think, like, what would you say is the Allagash selling philosophy? You know, how do we sell beer?
I thought a little bit about that because we've been talking so much more about that as our sales team grows and we train internally. And I think that like the best way I could kind of, I feel like we focus so much on like a consultative approach at retail structured around like education and empathy, right? Like we want to be partners for the retailers. We want to educate them because the truth of the matter is like Allagash beers, the amount of beers that we make, they take romance, they take education, they take storytelling, they take nuance. Mm-hmm. And to be able to do that, I think is a huge piece of it. And obviously, you know, having really, really awesome beers helps. But there is a big piece, I think, that goes into more approaching the sales call in a collaborative and educational and empathetic approach.
I'll just add that's, yeah, I'll just add tying core values again. So it's like you think innovation. It's like, well, what does that mean when it comes to sales? And it's trying to find solutions for our retailers and thinking about quality, like consistency. Like, are we consistent? Like so many people do not follow up. You know, half the time you just have to show up. And so, you know, it's thinking about growth. True. And what does growth mean? Not just growth for volume, but growth like thinking about growing knowledge and growing relationships and just caring. And then the other thing I'll add to that is just, I was talking to our national sales manager, Matt, the other day about the acronym BAR, Be at Retail, which just goes back to showing up. You know, there's just so, it's so cluttered out there. And if you're not out there, you know, even if people like love Allagash and think about the trip they took to Portland 6 years ago, it's just somebody else could be in front of them. And, you know, we make the best wood beer in the world, but there's a lot of other people that are, you know, I never go in like Uzi Susie trying to shoot down other tap handles, but you know, I feel like everybody's like, Allagash, hardest tap handle takeoff in the country. I'm like, that feels good. And no, it's because we've consistently showed up over the years. But if you don't show up, it's just changed so much that if you're not there, somebody else is going to be there. So.
Yeah. I'm sure both of you have seen, I mean, you've been with the company 7-10 plus years. What are some of the biggest changes? There's what, roughly 10,000 craft breweries in the country now? It's something getting up there like that. Yeah, so I'm sure, as you mentioned, it's just so, you know.
It's so much harder now. Harder.
Yeah.
It's so much harder now. I mean, when I was working for Windy City back in, you know, say 2014, I mean, I was there from 2012 to 15. Growth was just, everyone just said yes.
The dog said yes too. He was just mimicking.
Everyone, yeah, he's car going by, shocker. Everyone just said yes. Go back to 2015, craft beer was different. There wasn't as much competition. Everyone said yes. Now there's grocery mandates. There's so many breweries. There's such limited space. Consumer buyer habits have changed to what they consume, to what they purchase. It's just a lot harder now, to be honest with you.
I totally see that. So you both mentioned empathy when you're talking about, you know, how we sell. Is there anything like, because that feels like something you wouldn't necessarily think of from a sales perspective. Like, is there anything more that, you know, we can say about that?
I think I'll let Suze kind of tie in this. One thing I wanted to jump in, because I think that putting your agenda on the back burner when you go on a sales call and kind of be there to collaborate and be more of a consultant and ask what the retailer is looking for, what the retailer needs, and see if you can then offer that is huge. And that's kind of what we went into more with like the empathy and the consultative approach. But I don't know if Susie's got something more to say there.
I think, you know, we have a series that we do in sales called Walk a Mile. And that to me is, you know, you're literally walking a mile in, whether it's the wholesaler's shoes or the retailer's shoes or the order fulfillment person, like what it's like to get beer in trucks. And, you know, you're just putting yourself in that situation. What would I want here? I mean, some people who own retailers, they're no spring chickens, bok, bok. They're a little older. So if you go in and you help merchandise, be like, I can help you. I can build a stack. You know, if somebody is having a baby, you know, we get that onesies in the mail so fast and that tap line's not going anywhere. So you just think like, what do they need? How can I help them? You know, not just trying to, you know, get an extra sale. And they remember that, you know, it's people are, I think in the summer, Mike can probably agree with me. I don't know how many people are coming from his territory, but my part-time job is getting people up, situated with their perk passes up at the brewery and sending my little Portland 101 of everything that, you know, where to drink, where to dine. And then they appreciate that so much because it's not like me just, oh, what's Susie trying to sell me today? It's like Susie's trying to make sure I have a good time in Portland. And that's not forgotten too quickly. So,
you know, one other thing I want to kind of add to that too is like, sometimes it's not about making a sale. Sometimes it's just being there and like going in and having a conversation and just listening and being, letting someone vent, right? Like, we've all had a last 2.5 years that have been really, really tough. And for our business model, where like 75 to 80% of our business was done in that channel of business that the lights went out, those retailers were hit even harder. And so the ones that have come back that are still supporting us, that are still keeping their lights on, supporting their families, their staffs, for our sales team to just go in and have a conversation and just be there, I think is one of the most important things as well.
During the pandemic, we had these great note cards with scenes from Maine that we, you know, I had a list of 100, you know, different retailers, some on-premise, some off-premise. Hi, how you doing? You know, just a little note, old-fashioned note card in the mail, just to say, you know, you know, this too shall pass kind of thing. Even though it's totally. July 22nd and we're still here.
This too shall pass at some point.
COVID forever.
Yeah. Eventually.
We hope.
Fingers crossed.
Probably not, though.
There's somebody, I think, playing the drums in the brew house. So I've been trying to use the mute button. Of course there is. Like the two times I come into this.
It's Branch. Like, it's definitely Branch. But to piggyback on the empathy and the sort of like relationship aspect of this, like I'm sure this is true for any business, but I think, you know, Liz, I think you probably agree with me that like we've found more and more, even in the marketing space, of like working with partners, finding people to do video for us, finding people to like be creative. Like we have become so much more reliant on those relationships too. And it's just so cool to like, I don't know, from a business sense of building that trust with some people and like, you know, making it so it's not transactional. It's actually like, Oh, we're here to mutually help each other, You know?
Yeah. It's incredible. I feel like there's just leading with kindness, and it sounds so cheesy, but it really like, and I feel like I've said this before, is like, I thought I was a relatively nice person before I started working here. And then I was like, Oh, like I got a lot of room to grow in the kindness factor. Cause it's just contagious around here. And I think, you know, that's, we work with and attract partners and try and help people in our community in a similar, and approach people in that similar, you know, leading with empathy and kindness. And the few times that I've, you know, shadowed some of your colleagues on the sales side, whew, what a day. I was just in
New Jersey, right? You're at there.
I was just in New Jersey, and we had gone into a very busy store after a long weekend, and it was, you know, you could tell it had been a busy store. And so there's a lot of people in there. And instead of trying to track someone down and talk to them, Jared's like, oh, let's help. Let's put the, you know, there was a case of Allagash over there and it needed to go over here. And like in 2 seconds, I was building case stacks. And I was like, are you sure? Like, is that okay? Can we touch the things? He's like, yeah, just it's fine. And it was such like this small thing, and it was so appreciated. And so I was, you know, that on top of the amount of just territory you cover in a single day and the meetings you have. And, you know, it's really, it's a busy day for sure.
They can be long days. Yeah. Most days are different, which I think is one of my favorite parts. It's a double-edged sword, because now as like an area sales manager, I'm not out in the field as much as I used to be, which I really liked kind of coaching and seeing things and surveying and being a bit more visible. So it's really fun to be able to get out and do that when I can. Yeah. But just the fact that like everything is different, every day is different, but they're long, they're fulfilling. Sometimes they're busier than others, but it's
on the road. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in your markets, what is the perception of Maine, and what is the perception of Allegash in Maine, in Chicago and in Philadelphia? I feel like it must be different than what we think here.
I think the first bottle of Allegash White, and I believe it was a 750 milliliter of Allegash White, in Philadelphia was 2004, 2005. And so it's a brand that's been established 17 years. And it's, you know, one of the biggest compliments I get is sometimes it's all local, like on tap, and then it's there's that wooden handle made in New Hampshire. And that is really cool to know that we're 7 hours away, you know, in Portland, and that we've, you know, somehow that's our goal, is to make us seem as local as possible. And then, I mean, who doesn't think, like, I think Maine, I cross over that bridge from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and I just think Serenity. It's like literally one of my favorite places in the world. And I'm surprised how many people during the pandemic, it was one of those trips that you got away, but you didn't have to get in a plane. So many people for the Mid-Atlantic region were heading up to New England, which is cool. And then they either were like, I can't believe I'd never been. It's now going to be an annual thing. And I just love that people love my home away from home. So I'd say that the brand definitely resonates down here. Michael?
A little different for me just being in the Midwest. Like, it's not a six, seven hour drive. And I used to, part of my territory used to be in the Southeast too. So I didn't have as many visitors or as frequent, but when I did, it was like a big deal. Right. And I hopefully would get some notice and I would set them up. But I think the perception out here in Chicago is, and it varies, right? It depends on where you're at in your craft beer knowledge and experience and how much you care, basically, right? Some people will just refer to Allegash White as the Allegash, or they think that we're Portland, Oregon, not Portland, Maine. I think it resonates. I mean, to Susie's point, there's a ton of local breweries everywhere. Chicago is no different. And there's a ton of great, great breweries in Chicago. And many retailers like to support that. They want to have their menu be local only, but there will be an Allegash White, whether it's in can, bottle, or on tap. And, I think that people recognize the brand. They recognize the name. And most importantly for me is it's kind of synonymous with quality, which is always like the thing I hang my hat on the best, which is great. Like, we're just tried and true. And I think people recognize that as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's great. Like, I'm going to speak from my own personal experience of like perception of Allegash, even within Maine. And I feel like it is either, where's Allegash? Like, what's that? Like, people in Portland who are like, what's Allegash? What do they make? Which is fine. You know, you're not supposed to know about everything. And then I think the other perception is like, oh, Allegash, like, that's a big, they're big, right? They're real big. And like,
for sure,
for Maine, for sure. We are the largest brewery in Maine, but like, I don't want, like, it's funny. I was like thinking about this in my head. I was like, I don't want to explain this with like a chip on my shoulder or anything. But I think like the fun part about working here is it is still not that big as far as like a regional brewery sending our beer to Florida and stuff like that. Like, it's one brewery. Like, I know everyone who works here. Like, you know, it's got this like sort of small brewery feel, but then with a larger footprint. And so I think, I don't know, my sort of interest to a certain extent with this podcast is like just kind of introduce people to the people of it too, and to kind of be like, you know, it's not this some big conglomerate that is, you know, no one knows any, you know, I don't know, like, you know, it's no, just a different.
I totally get that for sure, Brett, because like, there are certain retailers who are just like, no, you guys are everywhere, right? Like, it's, we're not going to pour, you guys are everywhere. And now that we can like, the consumer can get our beer in local chains out here, like Jewel and Mariano's and Meijer. And With that comes like this cachet, like, oh, you guys are sellouts. It's like, you don't know how long it took us to get to this point. And like, we're just trying to grow. We're a small, independently owned and operated family business that is just growing and trying to be sustained growth. And it's, you know, it's opportunities like this that help us get bigger and better. And it just makes us reinvest back into ourselves better to be more sustainable, give back more, make sure our quality is better. But I definitely have that out here too. It's like, no, I'm not pouring Allagash way. You guys are everywhere. We also have it where it's not the same where you guys in New England. People are just like, yeah, I'll have the Allagash. And they'll get like triple. And they're like, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. Like, I want an Allagash white. If you look at the numbers in Chicagoland, it's like 92% Allagash white. It's, yeah. We try to get some focus on the other SKUs because white is just, it sells well. It does well.
Yeah.
It's our lead horse for a reason.
Yeah. And what does SKU stand for?
Great question.
Selling. I don't remember.
Scannable. Oh, what is it? Scannable.
Unit.
Right.
U is for unit.
This is going to have to be edited for sure.
Let's just make it up.
No, stock we're not unit. Even. Yeah. We're, the only thing we know is the unit.
Stock keeping unit. Yes, everyone knew unit.
I think that was
so embarrassed right now.
No, but you always say SKU. Why? It's like scuba, like, you know, self-contained. Like, no one needs to know what scuba means. You just know what scuba means, like the acronym. Yeah. Anyway, we're all good. Keep it in. Keep it in. So I want to, like, which one do I want to ask first? Yeah. I think while we're talking about specific areas, I do want to touch back on, Susie, your sort of like connection to the Philly beer scene. Like, I think talking just a little bit more about that Women's Beer Club, maybe even like Philly Beer Week. I don't know if you've had any, like, what involvement you've had there too, but I feel like there's such a cool, robust scene in Philly. I'm interested to hear how you've been connected to it.
Cool. Yeah. In the early noughts, it was like 2005. I was working at a restaurant with a Belgian focus, which was a great time of discovery. You know, your shift drink every night is like Goldendrock and Perrot and Chimay and West Small Triple. I'm like, this is a life. And there was a few women that had come in, and often, like, it was neat because people would try things. We had Miller Lite on the menu, but he put a surcharge on it. So he's like, if you want to pay like $5.50 for it, like, you could get this beautiful Belgian beer for $6, or you could get a Miller Lite for $5.50. And that's obviously, you know, 2005 pricing. But so I was working in a Belgian restaurant. Three women came in, and I still keep in touch with some of them. And they were so curious about the beers, and they shared my enthusiasm. And I was just like, this, it was just a different table than all the other tables that I waited on. And I was like, you ladies are so exciting. You make me want to start a club. And this was, yeah, this was June of 2005. I don't even know if Pink Boots was established yet. It was within a year they would come. Unless, Liz, do you have an answer to that? If Pink Boots was 2005, 6. But it was a very long time ago, once upon a time. And so we met the next Wednesday, and then next thing you know is the MySpace page, and it just turned into this, blossomed into this community of women that was lawyers, teachers, bartenders, and everybody, you know, some moms, and everybody just had taken a Wednesday night to crack open a few beers. Sometimes we would have mixers and we'd let the men come, and now there's like, I think at least two marriages. Mm-hmm. I'm a match, not just the leader of a beer club, but a matchmaker. So that's a claim to fame. But it was neat, and it had about 5 years. And then I actually, right around the time that I joined Allagash, it was just like, I was a little overwhelmed. And I think some of the women wanted to see it continue. But, you know, we talk about shelf life all the time in beer. And it had its shelf life, but it was a really good 5 years, you know, so many, you know, amazing beers, relationships, conversations. And because of that, you know, it got national attention, which is pretty cool. Something I don't really think about too much these days, but it was a really neat time. So many other women are still in my life, which is really cool. And then with Beer Week, you know, I think that we were the first city in the country. California might debate that. But I think we are the first city in the country to have a beer week, and it established, like, hey, we have this amazing beer culture. I mean, Monks, the eponymous Monks, it's an institution, been around since 1997. Sir Tom Peters, he was actually just at the brewery a couple weeks ago, and he opened this they were exporting more beer from Belgium than they were actually selling in the homeland because of like this man. You know, so I don't think one man can change the world, like, or at least the beer world of Philadelphia. And he just upped the game for beer, that after that, everybody wanted to open a beer bar. And so there was just this really strong beer culture, tons of breweries. So of course there's like the local breweries, but also just the import game was so strong, like way back in the day, like the first Belgian import ever was Kwok, and that poured at the Khyber on 2nd Street. And that was in like maybe the early 90s, late 80s. Like it wasn't happening anywhere else in the country, which is really cool. So it's like a very rich beer history here. And so then Beer Week was like this extended week. So Beer Week was 10 days instead of the normal 7-day week. And at one point there was like over 1,000 events. Like I personally, I think my record was 32 events. Like I can't believe I lived to tell. It was brutal. Aww. I was doing 3 events a day. I was like, you know, just withering away into nothing. That was actually even before my time at Allagash, though. So Allagash wouldn't let me do 32 events in a week.
They probably didn't start at 9 a.m. Maybe they did. I don't know.
Oh, there was beer breakfast. There was it was around the clock. It was intense, but there was also so much community because all the reps were doing it together. And it was just like a big love fest.
Yeah,
that's really nice.
And then, you know, the pandemic happened. And with anything, it's gotten a little harder to get people out. Like, what kind of dynamic events are you doing to get people like butts and seats, sell tickets, what have you? But there's a couple people this year that like, we can't let Beer Week die, you know, because with the pandemic, they try to go virtual.
You still did it this year, right?
And then, yeah, kudos to Rich Colley and Ken at Memphis and the owner of Human Robot. They are like, we're going to do this. And they, even though they had their own businesses, they promoted everybody's events, which once again just shows the friendship and the culture that the city has. Like usually bars are like, how many people can I get in my bar? But in Philly, it's like these two guys were promoting everybody's events, trying to keep it. So we'll see what happens in 2023. I guess if Ken and Rich have anything to say about it, we'll keep going, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then there was just beer weeks over then. Like I visit my mom in Phoenix and it would be like Phoenix beer week. And that was years ago, but it's just everybody had a beer week. And so for me with like major metros of Baltimore and DC, I would have the DC beer week and the Baltimore beer week and the Philly beer week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's because there's local craft breweries everywhere now and everyone has a local spot to celebrate. And it's a great thing for the community.
Yeah. Okay. And it was really fun. I mean, we would just do different races. It was like a field day. Like we were all, Rob would come down and it was, I don't know. We still joke about some of our times, but yeah.
Speaking of, I guess, you know, Mike, tell us a little bit about the beer community in Chicago and what sort of makes it special. I guess I have some good memories of, I feel like once a like Saison Day, there somehow was a cardboard cutout of Rob that made it to Off Color. And every year around Saison Day, it makes its way to the internet and it brings me great joy. So
that is courtesy of our good friends at Off Color who are the best and make great beer and are great partners. And we do a Saison Day event with them. We did one this past spring for the first time in a couple of years, which was so, so cool to do again. But we've been doing the Saison Day thing in Chicago before it moved to local breweries Off Color. We did it at the Hop Leaf, which kind of talking what Susie was saying about Philly and Monks. I mean, there's a few institutions in Chicago as well that have just been everything for craft beer and the beer business. I think Hop Leaf, I think Map Room, I think Bavarian Lodge, just to name a few. The craft beer scene in Chicago is awesome. There are so many great breweries now, like any major metropolitan or even just the suburbs. Like it's not even just Chicago, the suburbs out here. Chicagoland has so many great breweries. There is no shortage of options. To go back to your question, Liz, about the RT cutout. Yeah, our friends at Off Color took it upon themselves. I may have provided them the image, but they did all the legwork as far as making the cutout. And that was just awesome, man. We had a great, great turnout. We did a collaboration beer with them a couple of years ago as well, which was really cool. We brought some of our yeast out and we used some ghost lemons to do like their kind of variant of Allagash White, which is really, really cool. We had some select bottles and kegs that made it out to the market, which is cool. But the market is saturated And I don't mean that negatively, because there is a ton of great options in Chicago and Chicagoland and the surrounding suburbs. It's very, very lucky. And it's not even just that, because it's Chicago, because it's the middle, we get everything from the Rocky Mountains. We get everything from the Pacific Northwest. We get everything from California, from the South, from New England. There is a lot of beer in Chicago. So there is no shortage of great options. It is an awesome beer city. The weather is challenging, as you guys in Portland know, where we have winter for 6 to 7 months a year. So around April, when we get our first 54 degree day and the sun's out, people are throwing their patios open, wearing t-shirts and shorts, and we're out and about, and we're looking to take advantage of patio season. So summer's in Chicago, full effect right now, and it's going great. It's the best place to be in the country in the summer, for sure. It's awesome.
That's awesome. I think I have like a couple small things that I wanted to go back on and just kind of explain. Saison Day being a holiday that we created here at Allagash that's for the Saison style of beer, French style of beer, farmhouse beer. You'll hear it heard told as farmhouse beers.
But anyway, we've been doing that for a bunch of years.
I think you're right. I actually can't remember. I always get the number wrong. I'm like, it's the fifth, it's the seventh, it's the ninth. And so we just put random numbers every year we have it. But yes, I think 2015, you're right. And So there's Saison Day. One thing I want to go back to, Susie, you mentioned Sir Thomas Peters. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Who is that? Is that what you said?
Sir Thomas, said it's funny to say Thomas Peters. Tom Peters, he's been knighted,
Tom Peters,
but he is the owner of Monk's. And...
Oh.
Monk's Cafe on 16th Street in Center City.
Cool. Yep. Sweet. Thank you. So I feel like this is a good place to, like, I feel like I've got one more question. Liz, is that okay with you?
Yeah, go for it.
So the last thing I'd say is, if someone is interested in getting into the beer selling business, what advice, Susie and Mike, would you give that person?
Back in the day, if I was asked this question, I would say remove weekend from your vocabulary, because pre-pandemic, it's just, you know, you work a festival, then you can take some flux time during the week. But it's just, I think the challenge is that you're always on, you know, like there's so many 9-to-5 jobs that 5 o'clock, you know, the day is done. And there's always just one more account you can connect with, one more, you know, case to drop. There's just, it's I guess it would be to, networking sounds kind of cheesy, but to, you know, find yourself at festivals, volunteer to help, you know, people pour beer. that would be great. You know, just to make sure that they understand exactly what they're getting into, as opposed to like, I like beer. That would be so cool. Like, you know, how many festivals that I've poured at over the years where people just thought that I have a dream job. I do have a dream job, but it's because of who I work for, not just because I sell beer or because I love beer. Like, sure. I love beer. But I think some people don't realize exactly what they're getting into. And when, you know, Mike had mentioned diverse days before, it's like, this is such a neat job because you get to be creative. You get to think logistically. It really checks a bunch of different boxes to like really fulfill, you know, the people who are on board. But I don't even know if that answers your question. I would say I have this like philosophy that people always say work hard, play hard. And in this industry, it's more of like a play hard, work harder. You know, like it used to just be like this, like long party. I mean, it was like Mike said, it used to be so much easier than it is now. And it's like really treating it like it's a profession and not just like this fun gig that you get to drink beer all day. Like it's not exactly what everybody, you know, we work really hard. I mean, I look at so many numbers, like I get dizzy. It's like, it's not exactly what people think it is, but it's probably even more rewarding, you know, than they think it is, because it's not just talking about beer. It's especially at Allagash. I mean, we're talking about the environment. We, you know, now have a sustainability coordinator, which is amazing. Like, and we get to bring all that to our accounts as well. So that's a short story long, I like to say, but.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think to try and get in, trying to get into beer, right. It's probably not as glamorous as you think, just like Susie said. But there's no shortage of breweries now. Like we've been talking about that this whole time. So there's opportunities. Get out there, be part of your community, educate yourself, try new things, be a self-starter, be motivated. You have to grind. You have to get out of bed in the morning. You have to route yourself. You have to be organized. You have to be impactful. You have to be efficient. You got to be friendly, because it's a relationship business at the end of the day. So to try and get in, I think it's just all about making connections, making relationships, getting your chance, and hard work pays off.
And I also will note that it's kind of fun to hire people that, you know, people will never get experience if somebody doesn't give them a chance. And everybody's like, oh, you need this, you know, amount of experience. Like,
yeah.
You know, we recently brought someone on board who was just this amazing storyteller. And she did such a great job of thinking about her experience and creating parallels to how that will help her sell beer. And I just thought it was so neat because I've seen so many people want to get in the industry, but then like not have the experience. So whether they're a bartender or a lot of people make the move like Michael did from a wholesaler to a supplier side. I think you see that probably more often than anything else. But I, you know, just encourage people to give someone a chance. You know, they won't get experience if everybody says no. And you never know, like when your next great hire might come from a totally different background.
Yeah. And if you're working for a retailer, whether it's on or off premise, like we said, like bar, tavern or grocery store or liquor store, those reps come in weekly, say hello, make relationships, make an impact.
I did, like Susie, I totally connect with what you're saying about not necessarily having experience in beer. And I think like Liz might feel this way a little bit too, because I had no beer experience before I came to work for Allagash. Like my expertise or my sort of wheelhouse is more in advertising, writing, marketing, and that sort of stuff. And it's like, I'm super grateful that they, you know, took a chance on me and were like, well, this guy can kind of can do what we need him to do, but he doesn't necessarily know that much about beer. And I definitely did not know that much about beer when I started at Allagash. But then it's like, you know, you learn and then you grow into the position and like, I don't know, it's just so fascinating, all this sort of stuff.
So Susie, you're in Philadelphia, Mike, you're in Chicago. You know, how do you stay connected with Portland and the brewery and all of us up here? I know you get to visit us a few times a year, but what are some of the other things that, that help that connection alive and well, stay alive and well?
It's called From Maine With Love, the podcast.
Oh, nice.
avid listener.
So
The brewery does like just a spectacular job of keeping us engaged. I mean, we have our internal communications. We have one-on-ones where I'm constantly connecting. You know, yesterday I reached out to my buddy in Vermont, Ben Kinney. Hey, Ben, how are you? You know, just to say hi. He's not on my team, but he's what a guy. Shout out to Ben on the podcast. Shout out to my whole team,
Ben.
Too.
Shout out to
Alan,
Ben.
Katie. Caleb. And it's just ever present, really. And then social media helps, you know. I was an early adapter to Instagram. And so it's funny because now it's like, is this going to be around forever or not? But, you know, seeing what the brewery is up to, I mean, every single day, I see what you're up to. It's like everybody's keeping busy up there. And we have meetings, but the meetings are good. The meetings aren't meetings for meeting's sake. I feel like we all connect and we're just always just trying to make it better every day. And so I feel, you know, pandemic to current date, like I feel extremely connected. And hopefully, you know, our teams do too. You know, they said, I mean, a couple of years ago I had hernia surgery and I got the most beautiful flowers I've ever seen. Like regular companies don't do that. I mean, not that I want to get another hernia, but like I've never seen flowers that pretty.
Almost makes it worth it, huh, Suze?
Pardon?
I said almost makes it worth it, huh?
Almost makes it worth it. Don't get a hernia. But like, yeah, I'm going to send you chocolate chip cookies. You'll feel connected to me in Philly.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah.
There you go.
I will say that being a bit farther based in the Midwest, this is probably the most difficult thing for me. And I don't want to speak for my colleagues here in Chicagoland or California, but I know that this can be tough. We just got to go back to the brewery in June. For me, it was the first time in 2.5 years, which was just nuts. And that, may I tell you, filleth my cup. I have enough from what I took away from seeing people that I hadn't seen in some time. I mean, Brett, you talked about it before, just like the connotation that Allagash is big. We're the 23rd largest craft brewery now. We're big. We still are like small and family. Like I got to walk through and see people that I hadn't seen in 2.5 years and pick up like I was there 6 months ago. And it was awesome. So being able to go back to the brewery 1 to 3, 2 to 4 times a year is huge. I will also say internally, Susie mentioned our news flash that's internal facing that is run by our stellar HR team that just shares all the happenings, whether it's what's going on from pilot beer to what's going on in different regions to if someone had a baby. Like it's just like a newsletter internal that really, really helps keep you tied into what's going on. And then we've also did something throughout the pandemic, which was get to know a coworker. Susie, you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Sure. Get to know a coworker was every week. It could be any department. It could be engineering. It could be accounting. And you know, spend 15, 30 minutes just talking about anything but work, really. which was cool. Like one time I was assigned our national sales manager. And I mean, we talk all the time.
You talk to them every day. Like,
you know, how are the kids? Yeah. You know, what are you eating? And that was, it was just enjoyable because like we didn't talk about work. And, that was a neat program and it's still going on. So it's that, you know, definitely a great, HR does an amazing job of organizing programs like that to keep us connected. And I'll also say every year on April 24th, I get a call from Rob Todd, which is awesome that Rob calls me on my birthday. It's almost a joke because I don't want anybody else on sales to feel bad if Rob's not calling them on their birthday. Because gotta call Susie on her birthday. He calls
now they feel bad.
So that's great. And then I call him on July 8th. So that's just a neat thing that, you know, it all starts at the top. And it's really fun to work for him and he makes sure that everybody stays connected.
We are lucky. Everyone, when they have their birthday, gets a cool gift. And whether it's an insulated cup or this cool homemade like checkers set that was made or Connect 4 that was one time, cheese board. We have a ton of internal facing communication. I agree with Susie. I don't think too much of it is wasted. So I get to see everybody. Susie and I as area sales managers get to interface with you guys in marketing. We speak with HR. We speak with sales leadership. All of our teams, key accounts, general sales, we're always chatting. So there is definitely that. And then, like I said, when things are right, we're going to the brewery 2 to 3 times a year. And that really, really fills the cup. Very nice.
When the sales team is at the brewery, it brings so much joy. I feel like the energy level is like kicked up so many levels. It is, I don't know. It's just so much fun when everyone's in town. And I feel like the way that you feel coming up here, I feel the same excitement to have you here.
We love it too. Cause I think I made that joke in June when we did sales meetings. I'm like, well, guess who's coming to town to stimulate the local economy as well.
Got to frequent a couple local accounts.
You got to show love. Yeah. Got to support.
Show love. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh man. Well, I feel like that's a wonderful place to finish up. Togetherness. Yeah. It's really nice. So Susie, Mike, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
This was so fun. Thank you so much for having us. You guys are doing awesome, by the way. I've been listening. And like Susie said, this is helping keep me keyed into what's going on at the brewery. And it's cool because I know everybody that's on it. So I'm just like, oh, what's up? But this is
you guys
great.
Have
Thank
to do
so
a redo at Branch, though, without the Wi-Fi issue. We need to figure out what else is a toaster oven.
I know.
Oh, dark box, no big deal. Now, Branch's headphones, that was like Bluetooth malfunction to the max.
Shocker. Thank you guys so very much. This
Thank
has been
you.
Awesome.
All right. Enjoy the weekend, guys. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye. This has been an Allagash Brewing production. And if you have something you want us to talk about on the show, shoot us a message at podcast@allagash.com.